Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
EU Startups Podcast is brought to you by Vonta. If you're building a SaaS business, achieving compliance with SOC 2, ISO 27001, or other in-demand frameworks can unlock major growth for your company and establish customer trust. However, this process is often time-intensive and costly. Vonta automates your compliance work, getting you audit ready quickly and saving you up to 85% of associated costs. And Vonta scales with your business, helping you continuously monitor compliance, unify risk management, and streamline security reviews. Join 8,000 global companies like Synethia, Flow Health, and Alica Bank that use Vonta to build trust and prove security in real time. Our audience gets a special offer of $1,000 off Vonta at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vonta.com/EU startups.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My guest today is Paulo Rodriguez. Paulo is the head of international at Vonta. Vonta recently announced its $150 million Series C funding round at a valuation of $2.45 billion. And this, among other things, is what we are going to talk about. Paulo, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm really excited about this.
Amazing. So I already know that you're based in Dublin and there's some amazing weather there. How are you today?
I'm doing very good. Unfortunately, this is like the time where the weather starts turning. So we're not as lucky as you to be in Barcelona.
Yeah, true, true. Barcelona is amazing. Paulo, as someone who's gone from, actually, let's dive right into it. You know, as someone who's gone from technical roles to leading international expansion, what's a cybersecurity issue you think most companies are getting totally wrong, but no one's talking about?
Yeah, I think this is like always, it's a very, very difficult balance, no. Especially for startups and coming into this world, right? Like you're trying to frantically find product market fit, and then you're trying to do all these other things that are kind of like growing up position. I think this is one thing that a lot of people get wrong, but mostly on the timing start planning easy to build your planning early to build your security. Like as you're building your security in the early stages, it is actually quite easy to do it. It's almost like working out, right? Like you're like, oh, I'll work out later. I'll work out. Like I'm not old enough to commit to a workout. It's like the moment that you introduce it into your basic routine, like that's built in for you forever, right? And then doing it later is a bit more complicated. You know, if you're 60 years old and you never worked out, starting to work out when you're 60 is actually really complicated. If you start working out from your teen years, it's part of your routine, part of who you are and part of how you keep healthy and fit. And I think the same happens with security. If you start building, like I'm not asking people like go extremely crazy because like your objective number one is finding product market fit. But like if you start building parts of your routine on the security side, then when you actually need to go big and provide a compliance framework, that's going to be very easy for you to achieve because you already have the basics, the fundamentals are there. And then building on top of that, it's pretty straightforward. Whereas if you try to do it from scratch, you're like catching up and you probably are in the back foot already.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Paulo, Vonta's recent $150 million funding positions you for big moves in the UK and Europe. What's the boldest risk you're willing to take to ensure Vonta dominates these markets?
Wow. I think there's a couple of risks that we are taking. They're thoughtful risks, but they're risks nonetheless, right? We started up serving the startup market, right? Like making sure that we help founders get, their first compliance certification. And I think our biggest risk now is starting to move into a different customer base, which are essentially security teams. So rather than just going, talking to a founder that doesn't really understand what it's trying to do, but it has pressure from customers or investors, we're now going to security teams that actually have a very strong opinion on how things should be done. And that fundamentally changed the way that we are building product and we're positioning that product. So mm-hmm. I think that's actually a pretty major risk, but one that we have to take nonetheless, because our value proposition on, hey, let me help you automate all these processes, which is really manual. And honestly, it's not worth your human energy to be done because it's 2024 and a machine can do that for you. Like, let's help us do that and use your human energy on something that adds more value to your business. I think that is a, you know, significantly high risk, especially like how do you move there without compromising what you're already doing for all these startups and providing services? And then the other risk, it's also geographical, right? Like when you're trying to expand a market that is quite greenfield, like this one, like you need to figure out where are you placing your bets. Like, are you going to go and invest like all in one place? Are you going to go and diversify? And our approach is to go really strong and really invest in the UK and in Australia outside of the US. Like, and those are going to be like the US, UK, Australia are going to be our main markets. We want to make sure that we are really, really established there and then continue pushing to the rest of the markets.
Sounds awesome. Paolo, AI regulations, like the EU AI Act are reshaping the tech landscape. Are these regulations holding innovation back or serve as, you know, necessary wake-up call for the tech industry?
Yeah, this is always this conundrum of like regulation first, innovation first, right? I think the reality is like we are in Europe and Europe tends to be regulation first. Like we, it's not always first, but it's like very close second, right? Like we really catch up really fast. Now that has advantages and inconveniences. On the inconvenience side is that, you know, there's a lot of hurdles that you need to go through. I think we're getting much better from a regulatory perspective in addressing that. Like if you think about like older regulation, like the Data Protection Directive back in the day, like every country had to transpose it. It was really complicated. You had no guidance whatsoever. Like I remember like when that came up, like in the 90s, I was actually starting to do some work. I was back in Spain. And I was working with people that were starting to prepare big companies for that regulation. Mm-hmm. And they were struggling because they would go to the regulator and say, hey, we're trying to do this, which is the way that we think the regulation applies. Yeah. Is this the right way? And the regulator is like, I'm not going to tell you yes or no until there's an investigation. And they're like, well, hold a second. I'm trying to do the right thing. And you're not really helping me. And I think one of the really good things that I've seen lately is that all these regulations are much a bit more pragmatical than they were before, right? Like the regulator is thinking more about, okay, I'm going to make it easier for you to apply this. And me being an engineer and not a lawyer, it's like, that is awesome. Just tell me what are the things that I need to do or like frameworks that I need to comply with that can be tested. Because that actually doesn't stifle the innovation. It actually allows me to innovate because it's very easy for me to comply, right? And in a way, Vanta, that's what we do, right? Like we try to take all that complexity, make it very simple, so it's very straightforward for you to comply. But I think we can do a lot more to make that legislation much more effective. And it's like, hey, here's the things that you should be doing. Mm-hmm. And with that, you should be okay. And you should be compliant with that regulation.
Yeah. True. Good answer. Very diplomatic, Paolo. Many, I can see why you're head of international, you know? Many startups, you know, getting back to what Vanta does, many startups see compliance as, you know, I don't know, a burden maybe. That's my impression. How would you convince a founder that, you know, investing in compliance early on is actually a competitive advantage?
Yeah. It's tricky. Right? Because compliance tends to be an afterthought, right? Like the reality. The reality is most companies go about finding their product market fit. And then when they start finding product market fit, a customer is like, hey, I really like your software. I really want to buy it. But like, what are you doing on security? Oh yeah, we're very secure. I'm like, can you prove it? Maybe not. And that's when people start thinking about, okay, compliance, what's this thing? How do we go about it, right? I think the biggest challenge that we have, particularly as a company, is how can we actually enlighten people to understand that if you don't wait for it to be enforced upon you, you can actually use it as a competitive advantage. Like, I'll probably give you an example, is probably easier. Like, there's one of our customers, Synthesia, video AI company. They were one of the first to get ISO 42001, which basically is AI management certification. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of like a very proactive move. Like, they really wanted to do that because they wanted to be in the cutting edge. They wanted to position that as a competitive advantage. And I think particularly in the AI world and how fast it's moving, I think they're making the right move. It's like, hey, I'm proactively doing this, so you can trust me. You don't have to worry about, oh, the EU AI Act may come later. How am I going to comply with that? Because of the like massive overlap between ISO 40001 and the EU AI Act, like, yeah, you're like, okay, cool. These people are doing the right thing. Is the right provider for me? And you know, I feel safer acquiring their services. Whereas if you have somebody that hasn't done any of that, you're like, whoa, what's my risk here? Does it make sense? Because the reality is, even if you're a startup, the people that are going to buy from you probably are not going to be, right? And their maturity on their security cycles probably dictates that they're going to do a very thorough evaluation of their vendors. Mm-hmm. And if they have a massive amount of risk, they're like, I don't think that the risk that we're taking outweighs the benefits that this software is going to provide us, right? So that for me is one of those situations where, you know, you need to start thinking as a CEO, like, what am I, can I sell more with this? Or not only can I sell more, but like, will I be able to sell faster? Like, in the very early days of ISO 27001, like the first security certification, like, that we actually had a lot of customers struggling to send the message of security. And then the moment that you have your ISO, like, that conversation doesn't exist. Right? Like, I lived it first person when I was at Dropbox and we were trying to sell to banks. And it was like, you know, this constant fight with them. The moment that we got our SOC 2 and our ISO certification, which, you know, back then took us like literally a year of engineering time to go and get it, like, the conversation was gone. It's like, cool, we have an ISO. And they're like, all right, cool. Let's move now to the value proposition that you have as a product, because this covers the security piece. Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just not that they're asking for it, but it's just facilitating the conversation that you want to have, which is, how much value can I bring you? I think particularly I see this in companies doing fintech and health tech, right? Like, they actually know it. So they try to achieve their certifications very early, because if they don't, they can't even pitch. They're like, sorry, we're not going to talk to you. If you don't have this, we're never going to be able to implement it. So we're not even going to take the call, right? So those things will happen in the market. And you can turn it into competitive advantage. Sometimes you're forced. Like, that's what you want to avoid. Like, just be in the control as much as you can.
100%. Paolo, back to you right now. We are kind of juggling these questions between, you know, Vanta and you. You're known from harmonizing sales and engineering teams. What's the toughest conflict you've had to mediate between, you know, these teams? And to what did you learn from it?
Wow. Yes, I am known for that. So I'm kind of like a bit of a hybrid. Like, I'm a computer science grad, spent 10 years of my career doing technical roles, and then 10 years in sales. So I kind of speak both languages. Yeah. And none of those groups thinks I am part of them. So I'm kind of like always in these ether in between. Which is actually really good to try to bring them together. So I think conflict between product teams or engineering teams and sales teams is actually good. Like, fundamentally, I think that's really important within an organization. The way I think about it is almost as this infinite tug of war game, right? Where both sides are pulling, but actually nobody falls, because there's a healthy tension in that pull, and you're pulling a bit, and then you're being pulled, and then you're pulling a bit, and then you're being pulled, but there's an equilibrium, right? So if you think about it, sales teams need to oversell the product that they have. Right? It's in their nature. Like, oh, can I push the limits that the product team has given me? Yeah. Can I sell it to this other thing that is not the same, but is actually very similar? And then the product team should react to that and say, huh, here's an opportunity that somebody spotted. Can I actually go and deliver on that? And have that thoughtful conversation and say, hey, yes, I think we can deliver on this. Let's give it a go. Right? Yeah. On the other hand, product teams need to come with innovation that sales teams don't know how to sell, right? And put them in uncomfortable positions. They're like, hey, we don't have the team to go and sell this product. Go and figure it out, guys. Like, go and try to build the muscle to be able to sell the product. And if you keep pushing yourselves in both those directions, your company will keep innovating from both sides. I think the biggest challenge companies tend to have is when they only innovate on one side, and then you become either a product company or a sales company. Whereas the ideal scenario is be both, right? But it's really difficult to achieve. And for me, probably my biggest challenge in doing this was at Dropbox, right? Because Dropbox was fundamentally two companies. It was a B2C business and a B2B business. And I was on the B2B side, which was kind of like the, you know, the guys there in a corner is like, oh, you go and try to go and sell to companies because we have a fantastic business here that works really well. Mm-hmm. And once in a while, we may do some features for you if we have bandwidth, right? Yeah. Over-exaggerating a bit, but that's kind of like how the business works, right?
Yeah.
And for me, my biggest challenge was like, hey, how do I bring this feedback that I'm gathering from customers in the ground and from the sales team on the ground? And how do we give it to the product team so they can action it? And in the beginning, we started doing things like, hey, here's a list of features and here's the impact in revenue, like based on the contract size. And that worked for a bit, but it was not very accurate. And it was not very accurate and it was not really good because we were almost doing product work for them. I was on the sales side in that time doing pre-sales, and I was telling product what to do. Yeah. And until we resetted that conversation, I had a really good counterpart on the product side, a guy named Eddie Fong, who's now in Salesforce. We built a really strong partnership. And what we did is we started really small. We started with a pre-sales team and with his product team, and we started building this feedback loop between us, where we would, like, every month go back and say, hey, here's the things that are coming up. But we were giving them an opinion from a sales perspective. It was not just like, oh, go and build me this feature. But it was more, hey, here's the problem that customers are having. Here's the challenges. Here's the impact for us as a company. Like, it is aligned to, like, eventually we will have to build something to fix this because it's aligned to our strategy. And here's how it's important for a sales team. Like, we're trying to acquire more net new customers the next two quarters, and this is actually stopping our sales. So I'm giving this a big priority. And we started building that small feedback loop and started working really well. And then suddenly, like, we started adding support to the mix, and we started adding post sales to the mix, and then we started adding the channel team to the mix. Then suddenly the whole company is part of this process, and everybody's given their point of view, but we're not doing the product job. Like, we're telling product what's our point of view, what's our opinion, and what we want them to do, but it's their call. Like, you go and fix that problem the way that you decide is the right way to fix it. And then product came back to us saying, hey, we're not going to do this, and this is the reason why. I'm like, I may agree or disagree, but at least I can come back to the customer and say, listen, we're not going to do it. Here's the reason why we're not going to do it. And it was in a lot of situations where I was actually delivering really hard news for a customer where they were asking for something and we're saying, we're not going to do it. But I had a really good, thoughtful reason why not to do it. And it ended up customers thanking me for like, hey, listen, thank you because we brought this issue to you. You actually considered it. We disagree with your outcome, but we actually appreciate as customers that you're treating us in this way where you think about it, you realize that this is not aligned with where you're going to take the product. And you're really communicating this to us because that gives us the trust that you're the right partner for us, even though we may actually disagree with this particular decision that you're making. Right. And that's how you build trust with your customers, right? And you treat them like as first-class citizens that they are, really. 100%, 100%. That, for me, was like the biggest challenge, just because the scale at that time was humongous. Like, it was already a public company, Dropbox, and right. It was a big, big challenge.
Sounds great, Paolo. Yeah, and as you said, a bit of friction between the teams is not a bad thing. Yeah, Paolo, cybersecurity, isn't typically seen as sexy, right? Yet, Vanta's growth says otherwise. what's the secret sauce that makes your compliance and security offerings, resonate so powerfully in the market?
Yeah, I think that it's really about meeting customers where they are, right?
You're just telling about customers and how you were like building these connections, and I wanted to say that probably this is going to be one of those.
Yeah,
secret sauces. Yeah.
It's really about understanding where the customer is and how do you meet them in there, right? So. Think about it this way. We have customers that come to us because one of their prospects is telling them, hey, if you don't have an ISO or if you don't have a SOC 2 or if you don't comply with GDPR, I can't buy your product. Uh-huh. And they're in this situation where it's almost like a hair is on fire, big emergency, all hands on deck. We need to do this because this customer is probably the difference between us racing around and not racing around, right? Like, because we're very early in our journey. And you need to go and meet them there and do that job. Like, the job that Vanta does, it's not really getting you a SOC 2 or getting you an ISO. Vanta helps you build a security program in a very structured and automated way. The outcome of that is getting a SOC 2 or getting an ISO, right? Like, getting a compliance framework out of it. But we're not going to their customers and saying, oh, buy this software that organizes your security program. Because that's not where they are. They are in, oh my God, my hair is on fire. I actually need this yesterday. And I think that's the secret sauce. And like, we're doing it, one, with the product, but also in adapting the way we work with them. For example, very recently, we've actually been working on not only just a software offering, but a software plus services that actually helps people accelerate their compliance journey, and we're getting people into ISO compliance, ISO 27001, in 5 weeks, which is crazy fast, like probably the fastest that you can do it. And that is because we need to meet customers where they are. They are not in a different position. They are there, and that's what they need. And we're like, cool, so we don't do services. Now let's figure out a way to partner with some other vendors to go and deliver those services and then push this to the market because that's what they want. And I think that, for me, is that key of, okay, how do we do that? And upmarket, it's actually very different value proposition, but again, the same concept. Where are customers in the upmarket space? Like, small security teams, very little resourcing. They're trying to do like as much as they can with one or two people. Yeah. And okay, what's our value prop? Can I help you get a one pane of glass to look at all your security posture in one go? Yes. Okay. That's the value. Then that's where I'm going to go. And I think that's the secret sauce. It's about making sure that you understand your customers really deeply and that you are always there to meet their demands. And I think this, it's a very universal truth that everybody kind of like knows about it. But actually walking the walk, it's not as easy as saying it. And I think it also comes from the leadership team. Like Cristina Cacioppo, our CEO, every time she's in Europe, like the first thing she says, like, I'm going to be here this week. I want to meet customers. And she meets with 10, 15, 20 customers. And that's the way for her to understand, like, are we in the right place? Like, are we doing right by our customers? Like, I know you guys are working on this already, but like, I'm coming here and I want to understand even more how we're engaging with customers and if we're meeting them where they are. And for me, that sends a really powerful signal to the rest of the organization. It's like, don't stop talking to customers. It's actually one of our principles. And it's number one for a reason. Put customers first.
I love it. Love it, Paolo. You've experienced firsthand the cultural nuances, in different regions. What's one misconception about compliance or cybersecurity you've had to tackle in international markets?
I'm actually going to flip this one around because I think it's actually a nuance with the US market. So being an American company, obviously we designed product for the US first. And that tends to work really well because, like, you know, security is a fairly universal problem that people have, and acquiring compliance, it's also a fairly universal problem that people have. And that's, I think, why we've been so successful. But one of the biggest differences that I've seen is that in the US, security comes later in the stage of the company. I think in Europe, specifically, I think we see it also in Australia, to slightly lesser degree, but like much more closer to Europe than it is to the US. Because we are kind of like a regulation first environment, people are very security and privacy conscious. Like, we think about it all the time, right? So you will hire your first CISO super early in a company. Like, you will have companies of 100, 150 people, they have CISOs. That will not happen in the US until you are like 300 or 400 people strong as a software company. And that is a big difference. So I think one of the things that we've done really well is to help the rest of the organization understand, hey, in international, this is happening slightly differently. Can we tweak our messaging to our customer base? Can we tweak our product in a particular way so we can actually adapt to that and be much more oriented to the market that we have in front of us? And I think we've done it really successfully. So one of the first things that, I mean, probably like 6 months into Vanta, like selling actively into Europe, like we had a EU data center, which is like really important for our customers here. And those little things that get you closer to the market, I think are extremely critical when you're doing international expansion, like on both sides. Like, what are the things that I'm not seeing of these other markets? What are the peculiarities on these markets that I'm working on? And what are the commonalities? What are the things that I listen, this is universal. I don't need to touch it. And I think that nuance and that communication between like the international expansion teams and the like HQ teams is incredibly critical to make the international expansion successful.
Paolo, as we've said, many of Vanta's clients are fast moving startups. Are there any, you know, or maybe one, dirty little secret about startup security that keeps you up at night?
I mean, what really keeps me up at night is that people are being sometimes too reactive. They wait until the very last minute to really put the focus on security. Having said that, most people are thinking about it, and especially in Europe, like all startups have, again, that security mindset and that privacy mindset, it's there. So they are always thinking about it, but they're not always committing early. And then that puts you in a position where you're in the back foot and reacting instead of being proactive. And I think it's a very, very, very fine balance, right? Like, your number one objective is find product market fit, right? Like, if you don't find product market fit, nobody cares how good your security is because your company is going to die, right? That's just the reality of it. But like, there's some signals that you should be paying attention to. Like, if people are starting to ask you questions about security, they're starting to send you security questionnaires. Like, those are the early signals that, okay, you have a bit of product market fit. People really want to buy your stuff. Go and turn it around. Make it into a competitive advantage rather than waiting for it to be my hair is on fire problem. And that keeps me up at night because, like, I see it every day. And sometimes, like, how can I help these guys to go and just, like, turn this around? And it's sometimes not easy because, like, you know, these processes are not simple. And compliance and security is not a simple topic, right? We're not talking about something trivial. It takes some time for you to acquire that knowledge. Like, even, like, the brightest founders, like, it's a complex topic. It's not trivial. Like, it will take you 2-3 weeks to wrap your head around all of these. Like, you know, 2-3 weeks, maybe the difference between you're closing this deal and you're not closing this deal. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, puts people in a not great position. And I wish more people would like be a bit more proactive and listen to those signals. And when they see them, it's like, all right, cool, react really quickly and start moving towards that.
Paolo, you're a cybersecurity pro, I can tell you that. after answering all those questions so far, what's one personal security habit you think everyone should have, but hardly anyone does?
Oh, like maybe you personal have. Thing.
Yeah.
Personal. Okay. For me, it's educating my family about cybersecurity. Because mm-hmm. If you think about it, your household is like your company, right? Yeah. You have bunch of people in your household using computing devices. Uh-huh. And if they're not educated, if they don't understand cybersecurity, if they don't know the basics, and if they like, then you're getting exposed massively to an attack. And we've seen it. Like we've seen like cyber attacks where they don't attack the target, but they actually attack the spouse of the target or the like a sibling mm-hmm. or like a family member of that target, in order to get access to that target directly, right? By attacking their computers. Mm-hmm. So this is one of those things that I do at home all the time. Like my kids, like I have 2 kids yeah. and like they understand like, you know, like how to build a strong password. Like they understand the concept of a password manager, like all those things that are sometimes basics of cybersecurity, and that if you're exposed to, you know, like a modern computing environment, probably your company teaches you how to do that. But like, if you stop there, if you start with you, then you're leaving yourself open on the other sides. And also like, you know, the more that you share that knowledge, the mm-hmm. more complicated it's going to be for bad actors to actually achieve their objectives, which is ultimately not a really good thing.
Yeah, 100%. Paolo, lastly, this is going to be the last question. I mean, I've been enjoying this conversation a lot, and I like, you're a great storyteller, I wanted to tell as well. Like, it's pleasure to hear your story and your answers. They're very, very good. I like them a lot. And Paolo, so if you could implement one piece of advice into every startup founder's mind when it comes to compliance or cybersecurity, what would it be and why it's just, you know, it is not non-negotiable?
Okay. The first thing I would do is build security into your routine, mm-hmm. right? And you don't need to be a pro athlete, yeah. but just go for a run every day for 20 minutes, right? That will keep you fit. Mm-hmm. And then if you decide that you want to run a marathon, that's easy because, like, mm-hmm. you know, you already have a baseline. You're not starting from scratch, right? So you can actually do it in a very effective way. So that would be my first advice. Like, build the foundation of security. Mm-hmm. Like, build the basics. And the second thing I would advise people to do is, once you start getting good vibes of a product market fit, mm-hmm. once that you're starting to realize, okay, this has legs, like we can start like doing this repetitively and it's like, it's repeatable
yeah.
and this is moving. And now we need to start hiring more people. That's when you should start really thinking about building a security program. Mm-hmm. Not when a customer asks you to, but like start doing it then, so you can actually use it as a competitive advantage. And you can go and say to customers, hey, here's our software. Here's what we're doing. And mm-hmm. here's how we're taking your security and your privacy very seriously. Here's the things that we have implemented. Mm-hmm. We already have a certification, or we're in the process of acquiring a certification. And here's what the steps that we have done. Mm-hmm. That will build a level of trust with your customer base that is incredible. And it will not put you in the back foot. Like my biggest concern when, like, you know, I do a bit of advisory with the startups, like my biggest mm-hmm. concern with people on this topic is like, if you're on the back foot, you're already losing, right? Because you need to justify yourself. Like, be proactive at the right time. Like, don't go and do it the first thing when you build up a company, because then you're subtracting to finding product market fit. But when you start seeing that there's something in there, just be proactive, because that's going to be your next step. Like, going into a higher tier of customers. If you're selling to SMB, when you start selling to the mid-market, those people are going to do like vendor risk assessment. Mm-hmm. And how are they going to do it? Like, what are your security credentials? You need to tell me. Like 10 years ago, that didn't happen. That happened only probably like in the big banks. Today, any mid-market company does third-party risk management. Like they will check because that's the biggest exposure that they have today. So if you want to be part of their supply chain, you need to comply with that. So be really quick at identifying those signals of, now we need to start doing this. Like, you know, security questionnaires, people asking for, you know, like a lot of security questions. Like, okay, cool. Now's the time to go and turn it around.
Paolo, it's been such a pleasure. Maybe to end it off with this question. Do you have any excitement, new initiatives or projects going on either within Vanta or outside of it?
Wow. The most exciting thing that I've been working on that I think I kind of mentioned is like this program that we're building to get people compliant ultra fast, right? Like this, and this is something that we have been working on for a few months and we're starting to like deploy globally. And it's an initiative we started in Europe, seeing how our European customers were behaving. I think it's a very, very different way of doing things that we've been doing in the past, right? Like when I was at Dropbox and we had our first SOC 2 and our first ISO, it was a process of a year. And now we're able to do this in 5 weeks, which is like crazy. Right. And it was not possible for, I think we are opening up an opportunity here to do something really, really interesting and empower startups to go and sell to bigger customers much faster. So that is actually really exciting for me because I think it's one of those things where like, yes, we were doing a really, really good job already at Vanta, but now we're like taking it to the next level. And how do we actually help our customers do it much faster? Awesome. So that's something that, it gets me fired up when I talk about it.
Amazing. Great to hear that. Paolo, thanks so much for your time. Thanks very much for joining us and educating all the founders on cybersecurity and compliance. All the best to you. I hope to see you soon, maybe in sunny Barcelona. Greetings to your family and kids. And thanks for this episode. Talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Marcin. It's been an absolute pleasure. Take care.